This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It is our week in review, starting with continued fallout from the derailment Tuesday of an MBTA Red Line train at the JFK UMass station. It was the second derailment in a week after the MBTA Green Line train went off the track Saturday, and riders are fed up.
To me, it's just not acceptable, of course. We have been complaining about it for so long, and nothing happens, nothing changes.
The T doesn't work when it's raining. The T doesn't work when it's snowing. The T doesn't work when it's too cold, when it's too hot.
It's a little frustrating, especially with the rates going up.
MBTA General Manager Steve Poftak spoke in the last hour or so, saying riders shouldn't be concerned about safety.
An investigation is underway, and to the extent that we identify a root cause, we will address it immediately. I use the system myself on a daily basis, and I want to assure our passengers that the system is safe.
And Governor Charlie Baker says plenty of investments are being made to upgrade the system.
It's overdue. We want to make sure we get it right. I wish we could install it all tomorrow. We can't. But I believe we're heading in the right direction on that stuff.
But local businesses and political leaders, including Mayor Marty Walsh, say enough is enough.
I mean, I don't control the MBTA. We pay a lot of money assessment to the T, $80 million a year from the city, not including what the riders pay. But the administration, the leadership of the T needs to get this together and needs to come up with a comprehensive investment right now and plan. We can't wait anymore.
Joining me now is Joe Battenfeld, political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Also with us is Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Hello, Arlene.
Hi. Nice to be here.
All right. Well, let's do this, folks. Is Greater Boston in the middle of a transportation crisis?
Yes.
What do you think, Joe? Tell me.
Yes, I definitely think I think we are, and not just with the T, with the traffic in general. Anybody who drives, who has to commute to Boston or around Boston knows this. The T especially is troubling because that's the thing that they tell people to take to avoid, you know, it's good for the environment, you know, get out of your cars. But then if you have to go to a meeting, I always tell people, if you have to go to a meeting, don't take the T. If you have to be on time, don't take the T, because you won't get there on time. You know, you might not get there on time. So, you know, I think management at the T has a lot to answer for about this.
What about you, Arlene?
Well, I have a variation on the theme of that. I think Joe is right. With 40 derailments in the last 5 years, making us apparently the second worst in the nation, and at least in the last couple of years, there's a lot to complain about with the T. But if you're going to a meeting, I don't know that it's any faster to take a car, truthfully. And that's part of the challenge, because every time the T breaks down, everybody gets into a car or an overpriced Uber. And when people are late, whether it's because of the traffic or because of the T, they can lose their jobs. They lose their pay if they don't lose their job. So it's a serious economic problem.
I want to pick up on this Uber thing for just a second, because I did wonder why they got such a pass this week. I mean, Uber and Lyft jacked up rates during that red line derailment. And it's not the thing we've been hearing people talk about. Is it something that either of you thought about or noticed or have heard people talking about elsewhere?
Well, certainly if you take the Uber, if you have to take Uber, if you did it to go around, I mean, you had no choice really in this case, because, you know, if you don't have your car, the T, you know, the T's not working, how else are you supposed to get somewhere? And that's why they kind of have you over a barrel when something like that happens. They can charge as much as they want. So, you know, that's just the way the structure is right now. And it shows how desperate people are to get someplace that they are willing to pay those fares.
And it makes Uber part of the problem instead of part of the solution, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the notion that we have $10 billion in maintenance pending, that with a backlog, is just an absolute disgrace, that we're not taking care of that faster, sooner, and really already. I've got a lot of friends who are fiscal conservatives, and they say, gee, Arlene, you know, we ought to run the public sector like the private sector. Well, if they were running this like the private sector and it was a factory and you were letting your machinery go and fall into disrepair so you couldn't do the work the company should do, you'd be fired. I mean, the dramatic underfunding of this is just an absolute disgrace. And the notion that the Fiscal and Management Control Board is now giving some thought to trying to figure out a statement about revenues instead of just saying we need more money to fix and upgrade cars is outrageous.
You know, you talked about this repair backlog. It's a backlog of more than $10 billion. We do know that on Friday, the governor signed a bond bill that'll provide $1.9 billion over the next year for transportation upgrades. He talked about this. Here's what the governor had to say on Tuesday.
I said many times that The T has not been investing in its core system the way it should be for a long time. There's currently programming in place to invest in tracks, signals, switches, trains, power systems, and electronics, many of which will replace existing systems that are 50, 60, and 70 years old.
I want to piggyback that with one other clip, which is a cut from Kendall Square Association President C.A. Webb, who says, yep, there's repairs and we've got money, but we need to pick up the pace.
We're in a state of emergency. I was encouraged by the number of legislators I saw saying essentially that, but I was incredibly discouraged by Governor Baker's reaction, which is that the MBTA is on the right path. And, you know, my reaction to that is, okay, we might be on the right path, but if we get there in 50 or 100 years, it doesn't matter.
So I feel like those two things build on what you're saying, Arlene. And Joe, I'll throw this to you now. So enough money? Are we doing it fast enough? Do we need more revenues? And if that's the case, should we be raising the rates on an underperforming system?
No, I mean, raising the rates, it will do the exact opposite of what, you know, you're trying to do is get people to take the T. It's already too expensive as it is. And so I think raising the rates would be a mistake. And I think as far as Governor Baker goes, I mean, he does deserve some of the blame. He is the one, when he became governor, he took charge of the T and said, I'm going to take charge of the T. There was that big snowstorm that happened. And he made it
his 2015.
Yeah. In 2015, he made it his thing to take and, you know, invented the control board to take care of it. But at the same time, it's not just about money. I mean, one of the derailments was operator error. So that had nothing to do with money. I don't know how maybe you need better operators or something, but, you know, it's something always seems to be going wrong.
Well, in the man bite dog or dogs bites man scenario, the dog is usually biting the man. And yes, there was an operator error in one of the derailments, but the vast majority of the problems are maintenance and old cars and old rails and old equipment. And the notion that the control board isn't being super aggressive in saying we need more money into the system, not from fares. I quite agree with you, Joe, on that one. But the taxpayers in general, whether they take the T or not, benefit. Our economy benefits from it. And to not say that we need a lot more money into the system to fix it faster is, to me, the equivalent of malpractice.
So you both made reference to the operator error, which was the problem with the Green Line train on Saturday. We did hear today from General Manager Steve Poftak that they've ruled out operator error and foul play in the case of the Red Line derailment.
You know, there's elements related to the track infrastructure or related to the vehicle, and we continue to investigate that.
So are we safe riding the MBTA? What do you think, Joe?
Well, I mean, you know, if you judge by the latest derailments, no, you can't say that it's totally safe because, you know, some people had suffered some minor injuries. And, you know, if a derailment they were lucky that more people weren't injured, I think, with a derailment. If a major derailment happens, you know, then all bets are off. So I think the T in general is safe, but, you know, no transportation system is going to be totally safe, including planes.
There's so much going on here, right? So we've touched on costs. We've touched on new revenue, on speed of repairs, on safety. When I think about this all together, I had originally been planning to ask each of you, well, are you happy riding the T? I kind of feel like you've already told me your answer.
No, I'm not.
So let's talk a little bit about, so what do we do? We've heard all kinds of interesting ideas brainstormed. There's a city councilwoman, Michelle Wu, says you got to make it free, which from a user standpoint is fabulous. It certainly doesn't help us with our revenue problem. There's the question of increasing the gas tax. What are the two of you, if you were in Steve Poftak's place or in Governor Baker's place on this, where do you want to go? What investments do you want to make? What do you think needs to be done?
Well, just this past week, there was a hearing in the State House on the Fair Share Amendment, the constitutional amendment that would allow a graduated income tax, also known as the millionaire's tax. And that money, were it to pass, would go to two things, two pots. One is education and one is transportation. So I hope that every business in this state is supporting that initiative if it goes to the ballot, because it will make a huge difference in our transportation infrastructure.
How about you, Joe?
I think putting it to the voters is probably a good idea because, you know, people in Western Massachusetts should have a say in this as well, and they don't take the T by and large. So, you know, I think putting it to the voters is probably the best thing to do, you know, but I would rather make it a more specific question, you know, funding just the T, mm-hmm. just have a question funding the T and then see what people have to say about that.
All right. So we know that there are business implications for our commuting headaches and vice versa. Boston has become kind of a hub of business and investment with more on the way. Raytheon, the Waltham defense contractor, is merging with larger United Technologies, which is currently based in Connecticut. The merger is still subject to regulatory approval, but if it is approved, it'll be the second largest aerospace and defense company in the U.S. with roughly, get this, $75 billion in annual sales, which will make it second only to Boeing. And the new combined company would be headquartered in Greater Boston, which is great news. That's going to add about 100 jobs. Boston Globe's business columnist John Chesto says that there are obvious reasons the company would pick Boston for its headquarters.
The two biggest reasons they would be coming here, number one is talent. The cluster of smart people here is you know, been already well documented. And, of course, the universities in the area. And maybe tax policy.
So they might like the talent, but are they going to like the delays, the traffic jams? I mean, you just said a minute ago, Joe, you actually tell people, do not take the T if you're going to a meeting because you won't be on time. So are they going to like the infrastructure they're coming into?
No, they probably won't. But, I mean, at this point, you know, what are you supposed to do? The T is already in place and already is what it is. But I think, you know, getting these people to stay away, you know, new workers who are coming in, including the casino, to stay away from the roadways is a good idea. And to put them on the T, I mean, there's really no other choice but to do that.
Yeah. Actually, Arlene, do you have anything you want to add to that before
I
go on?
I think you hit the nail on the head about our vulnerability. Our Achilles heel on this, we've got great smart people and great higher ed, and it would be wonderful to have them in the greater Boston area, but the traffic is going to be a real downer for them. And if they add to it, it'll be a downer for us.
So I'm actually going to jump back. We kind of moved on to Raytheon, but this is the second time, Arlene, that you've talked about overall traffic and congestions. Both of you have made reference to what's going on the roads. We also know that there's a pretty significant Mass Pike infrastructure change that has to happen. There's some safety investments that have got to be made starting this summer. The second part of that is actually going to take something like 10 years to do. We actually had a couple folks on earlier this week, including Jim Aloisi, a former state transportation secretary and Mass Turnpike board chairman, on what that itself is going to mean for commuters.
The combination of this very disruptive but necessary construction work, plus some private sector air rights development, are going to combine over the next decade and maybe more to completely disrupt traffic on the Turnpike. Now, some people may say the Turnpike is already a parking lot. So whatever the word is that's worse than a parking lot is what the Turnpike will be.
Yeah, so, you know, we lost out on Amazon HQ, too, which would have been a huge influx of people and employees. But we are growing as a strong Boston economy. Is that going to grind to a halt if we can't make infrastructure improvements? Do we have a real economic threat going on here, Arlene? What do you think?
I think absolutely. We're going to plateau at a certain point. Big businesses are not going to want to go someplace where they can't get in and out or get their employees in or out in a timely fashion. That's a huge disincentive for big business to move in, far more than tax policy is.
What about you?
I think business will continue to come here despite the transportation problems. Boston is just too valuable of a place to come for businesses. I don't think that's why we lost the Amazon bid either. It's just because of transportation and traffic. So I think we're going to continue to thrive.
All right. So let's talk about the business side of this Raytheon and United Technologies merger. Now, it's all subject to regulatory review, but it is going to make one really big company, we said a minute ago, second only to Boeing in its industry. President Donald Trump told CNBC that he does have some concerns about what this merger would mean for competition.
When I hear they're merging, does that take away more competition? It becomes one big, fat, beautiful company.
Now, among the president's worries that this weakens the hand of the government in negotiating for military supplies, that's all true. But to his point of this turning into a big, fat, beautiful company, this, which I actually kind of like that, it really isn't a merger because Raytheon is kind of the junior partner in this. They come out pretty strong. This feels like good terms for Raytheon and good terms for Boston.
I think so. I think Raytheon came out well in this. And I it's interesting, you know, I was looking up political contributions made by Raytheon to politics. The politicians in this state have supported Raytheon, even though they're Democrats and largely anti-war. You know, and Raytheon, you know, let's face it, they're part of the war industry. And it's interesting that people like Elizabeth Warren have been very supportive of Raytheon, while at the same time, you know, in the presidential campaign trail, she's blasting defense companies.
Yeah. Now, Arlene, Raytheon does do business with Saudi Arabia. The Trump administration used emergency powers to bypass Congress and approve a pretty controversial arms deal last month that's going to allow high-tech bomb parts to be manufactured in Saudi Arabia. And the company doing the co-production is Raytheon. Here's the Boston Globe's John Chesto on the company's ties to Saudi Arabia.
Raytheon has taken some heat for its business in Saudi Arabia. It's still a small piece of the overall Raytheon business, so I see it more as, you know, maybe a political liability and one that may pop up during the review of this.
So, Arlene, you know, on the one hand, jobs, more presence. On the other hand, some ethical or moral concerns about Raytheon's relationships in places like Saudi Arabia. How do these international ties reflect on us here in Boston and in New England?
Well, there are folks in the state, some activists who want the state to not invest its pension system in any country that is in particular doing business with Saudi Arabia. And Raytheon would certainly be a target of that. I mean, the bizarre thing for somebody like me is that Trump's comments and concerns about will this raise the price of military hardware, that constitutes probably the first time I've ever agreed with Donald Trump on anything.
Mark, check the tape, mark it.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, we've had a kind of a raucous discussion so far, but finally today.
It's hard to express what David Ortiz means to the Boston Red Sox. When you love someone and they come in harm's way, it's jarring.
So that's Red Sox CEO Sam Kennedy on Sunday's shooting of the Red Sox legend. 9 suspects in the shooting will appear in court in the Dominican Republic today. Prosecutors say the shooting was an attempted contract killing, and the man had been offered roughly $7,800 to kill David Ortiz. Authorities are still investigating possible motives. Here's Boston Globe's Maria Kramer, who says that neighbors of the suspects in the Dominican Republic are not talking.
These are very poor neighborhoods, and getting people to talk there has been difficult. People have been very nervous, scared to talk about these suspects.
Ortiz is still at Massachusetts General Hospital recovering from surgery to his intestines and liver. Joe, what was your reaction to hearing the news?
Well, I was probably, like most people, I was devastated when I heard it and happy, though, that he survived it, you know, because not many people survive shootings like that. And but, you know, this case has had many twists and turns already, and there are many unanswered questions. We still don't know the motive, really. We don't, you know, there's 9 people involved in this. The shooter did an interview with a TV station just today and said that he didn't mean to shoot David Ortiz, that he meant to shoot somebody else. So, I mean, I don't know where this investigation is going to go. But it's certainly a bizarre case.
Yeah, so CNN is reporting that somebody caught some cell phone footage of the shooter through the bars of his cell, saying in Spanish that it was mistaken identity. They're also, the prosecutor's response to that has been that that is to stay alive in the jail to make that claim. So it's a disputed claim, but it's an interesting one. And it comes to this point, Arlene, that there are all kinds of rumors swirling out there about what did and didn't happen. The Globe reported that authorities are looking into whether this was hatched by prisoners behind bars. Some of the suspects have criminal histories here in the United States. There's been speculation about motives. What do you make of the case, Arlene?
I've heard or read a bit about the rumors, and Who in the world knows just yet?
Most people don't. Somebody does.
Yeah,
right.
$8,000 is not an awful lot to end someone's life on. I mean, I wish Big Poppy and his family, I wish him well. I wish them well, and I wish him Godspeed. But candidly, this whole story has reminded me of something that's always concerned me a little bit living in this area, which is the ways in which we turn our sports heroes into heroes, as opposed to simply good people who are good at what they do for a living. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's when I hear he sounds like he's a good man. I'm not a sports aficionado, and he sounds like he's done well, and I praise him for that. But there, you know, but I just don't think that some of the sports figures that we talk about as though they were heroes are actually not that at all. You know, I mean, in my world, a hero is the people that I honor and that I cherish are first responders or military heroes or even nurses, teachers, social workers, people who get lousy compensation for invaluably important work. You know, these guys are good athletes and they're excellent at what they do and they deserve lots of praise, but they didn't cure cancer and they didn't, you know, run into a burning building to save someone or, you know, risk their lives to protect someone. So I just think we need a little context for what if this had just been any old person who had this terrible thing happen to them? How would we be reacting?
So the two of you had, to me, a very interesting exchange about this before we came on air where you were reflecting on some of that, Arlene. And Joe, you had a thought that you added there.
Well, I just think that Ortiz is more than just a sports figure in this town and in the country. He goes beyond sports. He's done many philanthropic things, you know, to help children in around here. And you know, we all remember his words after the Boston Marathon bombing, which I can't say right now on the radio, but we all know what he said. And you know, he really fired up the region, and so
you know,
he,
even that, Joe, yeah. I know that famous line that he yeah. said about
you
this
know
is
what?
My effing
hang,
town.
Hang on just a second, because while you did just say it, let's hear him say it in his voice, too. Go ahead.
This is our city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.
You know, I do have to add, it just happened that my husband and I and my kids had tickets for that game. That was the game we had tickets for. And the reaction in the crowd when he said that, there was an electric charge of pride and hope that very clearly rippled through the people in the stadium. It was, you know, we have moments. It was a moment, but that doesn't mean that whatever you're about to say next, Arlene, is not also.
Yeah, go ahead, Arlene.
So jump in. No, I praise him for that. It was timeliness and it was wonderful. But one great comment doth not a hero make. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad he said it and it fired us up. But is that all there is? You know, so for me, my heroes were the people who were running into the on Boylston Street that horrible day and racing towards victims and racing towards what they thought might be yet another bomb.
Well, it is never a bad idea to appreciate those who put themselves in harm's way to keep us safe and take care of us in our everyday mundane lives. I do appreciate that point, Arlene. We've got just about enough time left to do our hubbubs, which is our brief stories or events that caught our attention this week. I always worry that I'm going to find one, and then I always find something that's fun. So let's go to you first, Joe. What's your hubbub?
Well, speaking of heroes, I have my hero of the week, a police chief in British Columbia, Canada, pulled somebody over and fined them $575 for throwing a cigarette out of their car window. Now, we've all seen people do that. It's one of the most rude, obnoxious things that you can possibly do in this world, I believe.
You two are crotchety today.
I think $575 is a fitting punishment, and we should do that more often.
Ouch. I'm going to say it again. You two are crotchety today. Just saying. Arlene, what's yours?
Mine isn't easier. It's kinder and gentler. It's about a collaboration that's taking place between the Museum of Fine Arts, the MFA, and the Boston Public Library, the BPL. They're doing an exhibit on Toulouse-Lautrec, the renowned 19th century French artist. There'll be some other artists, his contemporaries thrown in, like Mary Cassatt and John Singer Sargent and Degas, people like that, but it's being hailed as a joint, as a the Boston cultural institutions working together. So I didn't know that both the MFA and the BPL have extensive holdings of art of Toulouse-Lautrec's work. I mean, who knew?
Right.
And that they'll include in the exhibit some never before displayed pieces.
Wow,
so
that's
it sounds wonderful, but bonus points. If you have a card to the Boston Public Library, any branch, you can get in for free to the Museum of Fine Arts only through June. So if you're a card-carrying member of the BPL, you should take advantage of the special offer.
Okay, well, that is great. So my hubbub this week is just beautiful. And it was last weekend, there were some fishermen off the coast of Cape Cod who had what is understood to be an incredibly rare experience, which is that for about 20 minutes, there was a killer whale, an orca, that surfaced and swam alongside their boat. And they recognized that they were witnessing something very special. And in our chaotic life, I just love it that every once in a while, some of the other graces of nature peer up and we can experience them as gifts and recognize the beauty that's around us all the time. So
we're here.
As long as it doesn't come down to the beach in the summer while people are swimming around it, though.
So. Crotchety, Joe. I'm going back to my
beer. Just a note of caution, that's all.
All right. So listen, Joe Battenfeld, political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Thanks for coming to Radio Boston today.
Thank you.
And Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Hey, stay with us. Coming up, we're going to look at changes filed yesterday to the Trust Act and what it will mean for how Boston police handle federal immigration laws.